Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So nice to have you all with us on this Tuesday morning. It's the 25th of August, 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we'll get started with our rundown for the day and talking about all of the stories that have made it onto our radar. And of course, we welcome you as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, our political observer. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm here with Mr. Senor Coffee, and we're having a good time together.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. And keep you up all night, that guy.
No, this is Mr. Decaf.
Oh, okay.
But I use a brand of decaf that is so concentrated that it'll make you sit right up in your seat.
That's
so
good.
I don't know how they do that, but they do it.
Excellent. Well, good on you.
As they say in Central New York, good on you.
Good on you. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. And I know why that coffee, I know what it has in it, Alan, that gets you to sit straight up. Caffeine.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. No, it's decaf. It's definitely
that's what
decaf.
You say, right? Yeah.
Well, that's what they say. What do I know?
That's
all I know is it's
right.
Great. It's great. Go, whoa. It's like you had an electric shock.
Yeah.
We go now to investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm on my second cup of the real stuff, full leaded.
Okay. So you're ready to go.
Yes, sir. And I watched the convention last night, so if the coffee doesn't do it, that weirdness did.
All I know, Rosemary, is I had to go to the wonderful Fairview Hospital the other day because, being stupid, I fell down and fell on my thumb and broke it.
Oh, Alan.
Yeah. All I was doing in the dark was looking at my screen as I was walking to make sure I could hear Dragnet on the way, I hit a thing in the sidewalk and I fell down and I broke my thumb. But the point was, I went to the hospital, and the nurse was wonderful nurse, and she said, "I love the round table, I love Joe and the group, but I really love Rosemary."
And
that's
then,
very nice. I'm sorry about your broken thumb, but it brought me a really happy story. So thank you.
Yeah, she was so excited. Then she broke his other thumb. So all of us in the station are just looking at each other because we had no idea you had broken your thumb.
Yeah, no, I broke my thumb, and it's in a cast. It's in a
Did anyone know this? Okay. No.
So many bad things happened to
well,
me.
Well, we
that,
had
you
no
know.
Idea that you had broken your thumb.
This you know port- all your imaginary medical problems, and now you have a real one, and you didn't talk about it. This is out of character.
Yeah. No, not at all. But I used to have these kinds of problems, Rosemary, out on Fire Island.
Oh, there you go. And away we go. Well, I'm very sorry you have a broken appendage, but you know.
That's what they call an appendage attack.
At least it's not another finger. J.P. Miller is from the Empire Report. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. All my fingers are working well.
Excellent. Well, mine too, oddly. Well, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're fine. We're doing fine. Let's get started. Rosemary already called it a weird night. I don't know. I watched the convention, and it was there was a lot going on there, and we have more to look forward to over the next several nights. So let's just go through a couple of things. There were the main speeches seemed to be from when I say seemed to be meaning they were saved till the end. But Tim Scott of South Carolina gave what I would say the night's keynote. It was the last speech of the night, and was weird because it was rather hopeful, which was unlike most of the other speeches that took place throughout the convention. Donald Trump Jr. spoke, and that was quite to the contrary, not so hopeful. Nikki Haley spoke as well, and which was an interesting speech because she seemed to go all in on Trump, but also trying to, I think, keep an eye on her own political future, perhaps. And then there is the just the overall, well, as Alan would say, the lies of the night and the mistruths and what was said again and again and again about the Democrats and the radical left as they posed it. Alan, let's begin.
Well, first of all, I want to pick up on exactly where you left off, Joe, and that is that we all know that the reason Joe Biden won, in addition to, you know, having a tremendous amount of black support, was that he was the moderate in the party. He was not out to the left. And that is, I think, precisely what might win him the election, the fact that people are comfortable with him. No matter how many lies they try to tell about the Democrats and being radical and all the rest, there's no way they're going to pin that on him. That's for sure. Now, I thought Tim Scott was interesting in that, Senator, was interesting in that he offered an idea for black Americans that was a little different from what the Democrats say. The Democrats say we have to put food on people's tables, we have to make sure everybody gets health care, we have to do all this. He said, no. Basically, what he was saying is, we are the party in which when you make it, you really make it. I made it. And that was it was a good speech. I thought he deserved credit for making it. But if you peeled it away and you looked at what was really being said, it was disgraceful. Because we all know what the specter of racism and economic injustice has meant in this country. As far as Nikki Haley, her big thing was how she was an immigrant, or the child of immigrants, how her mother wore a sari and her father wore a turban. Isn't that great? Wait. Who are we talking about? Donald Trump, who is keeping the others out of this country? Well, as you said, Joe, she may have been taking a look at her future as opposed to his. So
well, and to start off that by saying that this is not a racist country, which I thought was quite a statement to make. Rosemary.
Oh, boy, where to begin? Okay, I want to begin by quoting Steve Schmidt. He's the Republican establishment guy who's a never-Trumper, and he tweeted today that this convention is a bubbling cauldron of delusion, insanity, and grievance. I think that sums it up the best. Let's start with Donnie Jr.'s girlfriend, the fundraiser, who gave the speech screaming as if there were a whole crowd of Trump supporters out there.
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Weird in an empty convention hall. And then it made his speech sound almost soft-throated, even though he was yelling also and crying. Bette Midler, the actress who is also an anti-Trumper, she said this morning, "What's wrong with Donnie? Why is he crying? Did his girlfriend yell at him?" I thought that was pretty apt. And if it sounds like I'm making fun of this, I really am. I think it was laughable that they're trying to paint Joe Biden as this radical extremist. As you know, many people in the Democratic Party don't like him because he's so centrist. And he wants to end suburbs. Where the heck does that come from? And our streets are exploding in violence and mobs. They kept referring to mobs. No protesters, no upset citizenry. There's just mobs. It was such a scare tactic. And also incredibly sexist. You know that the worst thing about Biden is that before his boss was Obama, this time it would be Pelosi and Warren. Oh, and AOC. Give me a break. I had a really, really hard time watching this. I would not have, except that I knew I was going to be on today and I had to be talking about it. I think two things hurt me the most, affected me the most. Herschel Walker,
yes.
How a black man can get up there and defend right. Trump as not a racist and a good guy and helpful to the black community is just, well, delusional. And the other one was that couple from St. Louis who held the gun on
the Black Lives Matter.
Talking about how all of our lives are in danger, and America will go down in flames if we vote for Biden. Wow. Just wow. How's that?
It's good.
That was good.
That was really good. That was very concise and good. Mike Spain.
Yeah, the word we heard a lot last week was empathy. They underscored how the Democrats, specifically Joe Biden, has great empathy for people and he can relate to people. And that is what motivates him to try to do his job. And that was a very popular, and successful message, I think, that came out. Well, this week, we're hearing about the cancel culture. And we're hearing that, and I've heard that term from several of the speakers. And the racism thing, good point. I mean, it is so offensive to call someone a racist. It's a really derogatory accusation. But our society is biased. And the definition that fits is racist. And that's very painful to acknowledge, and it's hurtful to think that I'm a racist. But just by who we are and how we all got here, we are skewed. And they don't want to admit that. They don't want to acknowledge that. And that was what Herschel Walker said. You know, I've been Trump's friend for 13 years. I resent being called a racist. Well, he certainly does resent being called a racist. Everybody resents being called a racist. But unfortunately, we live in a society that has practices racism, that it's embedded in our society, and it's got to be fixed. And it's painful to admit that.
Absolutely. JP?
I thought that the goal for the Trump campaign last night was to show that the president is not racist by bringing out Tim Scott, by bringing out Herschel Walker. And why are they doing that? Are they trying to win over black voters? I don't think they're trying to win over black voters. I think right now their polls are showing that they need to win over suburban white people, specifically suburban white women, and that Trump's biggest deficit right now in the election is that suburban white women view him as a racist. And so I think that those bringing across not just Herschel Walker and Tim Scott, but a number of diverse voices to talk about how Trump is not a racist. I think that's what their goal was. I think that those speeches were overshadowed, though, by Don Jr. and Kim Guilfoyle. I was surprised to read in the Daily Beast that those were taped speeches. Those were their best shots at those speeches. I thought Kim Guilfoyle's, I watched a number of them early this morning. And I was just, amazed. I think that's going to be kind of the story coming out of last night is Don Jr. and Kim Guilfoyle sounding angry and, you know, basically calling, like you all said, calling Joe Biden a member of the radical left.
Yeah.
But they wanted it both ways, right, JP? So in other words, we're going to bring out people of color and we're going to say Don is a great guy. But at the same time, they bring out with the racist messages that Don Jr., the Guilfoyle, but also the two people who brought their guns out when the peaceful marchers were marching by their house and who were black, by the way, I believe. So,
marchers were black.
No, the marchers were black.
Yeah, the marchers were black.
Black Lives Matter marchers, black and white.
Yeah, Bonnie and Clyde were white.
Bonnie and Clyde.
They were white. By the way.
Start to embroider that on a pillow.
By the way.
The Cuban guy who says Joe is probably a secret communist. I mean, if you want to go over the top, there you go. And one other thing. Do you remember when Trump put his two sons in charge of his company at the beginning of his regime?
Right.
Yeah, they're going to just do business and not get involved in government. Both of them are speaking at this conference. Both of them are still doing business. It's just emoluments clause, people. Get this guy out.
By the way, I just want to do a little bit of a clarification just because maybe somebody else heard me say that the two people who Bonnie and Clyde were black, they certainly were not, and I certainly didn't mean it. I meant that the people who were marching by were black or partially black, and that some were black, and that these two were clearly delivering a racist message. This is who we are. That's what happened.
Yes, that definitely agree with.
So
yeah, the group that walked by their house in St. Louis, a Black Lives Matter march, was very different looking than the group in Charlotte when they showed the audience. It was a very white audience. Yes,
I have to say I'm a little bit surprised that none of you have touched on what I think bothered me the most about last night was the weirdness of the president interviewing hostages that he quote-unquote released.
Well, he's a natural as an interviewer, isn't he?
Oh, man, he's the best. But that was awkward.
He didn't even ask their names. It was pathetic.
You could have always told them that they were fired if they didn't please.
I mean, these were people who have had a horrible thing happen to them, and then I don't know. It seemed like they were again hostages.
That was their payback.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was. I don't know if is that effective. I don't know.
No.
When Biden did his kind of interview portion last week, I thought it was very strong. It was humanizing for Biden, and the Biden was pre-taped, and Trump, from what I could tell, was also pre-taped. And I'm surprised that they weren't able to get some better moments out of what must have been, you know, 20, 30-minute sessions with both the hostages and the trucker and the nurses, and that those were the best moments that they could capture to cobble together for a 2 to 3 minute segment.
Yeah.
Biden certainly had a much stronger segment last week than Trump did last night.
Well, Biden was holding his more as a town meeting of how do you feel about this? What can I do to help kind of thing instead of just begging for compliments.
Hmm. Joe, right. we only have
right.
Joe,
how do you think this all played with his base and with people who are, you know, kind of inclined towards him because they don't like Democrats? Was it effective? We didn't like it.
I mean,
I think it was effective.
It was. It was, and the whole idea is you turn your people out, to hell with everybody else, you get your base out, and you get every one of them out, and then you find ways of discouraging the rest of the people from being fully participatory, and you win the election. That's what they're trying to do here.
Alan, we have about a minute.
I only wanted to say something really quickly. It's off topic, and I apologize. But you know how in the fund drives, my son Jonas always is pushing our wonderful radios.
Crank radios.
Yeah. And saying he was the only one in his neighborhood. Well, here he's sitting down there, and not one but two hurricanes passing over him, and I have a feeling we're going to get a new crank radio testimonial.
Yeah, that's no fun.
That's scary.
Yeah, that is scary. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk more about what's going on, and we have some letters, many letters actually, regarding the RNC last night. So we'll go to those as well. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller with us this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this news break from the BBC.
I'm not gonna get too sentimental like those other stick of Valentines. 'Cause I don't know if you are loving somebody. I only know it isn't mine. Allison, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Allison, my aim is true. Well, I see you got a husband now. Your pretty fingers lying in the wedding cake. You used to hold him right in your...
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller talking about last night, night one of the Republican National Convention. We go to letters now. Anna Marie says, I find it ironic that the RNC is talking about the unrest in the U.S. like that is what to expect from a Biden administration. Open your eyes, people. It's happening in the Trump administration. Great point.
That's a very good point.
Teresa says, this is fascism. No party platform, just allegiance to Trump and the Hitler youth who proclaimed Trump the bodyguard of Western civilization. Kyle says, how can any speech at the RNC be positive and uplifting? Our current president has been extremely vile towards women, minorities, and anyone that doesn't stroke his ego. He's done more to divide the country and has given bigots and racists a bigger platform to survive on. Why on earth would any decent person vote for him? Robert says, if Trump is already nominated, meeting yesterday morning, is this actually a convention or a four-day political ad using government property? Well, we've talked about this on both sides of these just being infomercials, right?
Yes.
A deep sigh. Yes, a deep sigh.
Well, I've said it before. I mean, there is an awful lot of routine things that happen at traditional conventions that, you know, that's never on TV. There's a lot of political connections that are made, a lot of future rising stars line up backing around the country, and then, you know, connections and lobbying goes on. And it does have some value for politicians, and some good things come out of it. I suppose some bad things come out of it, but none of that interplay is going on behind the scenes because there is no behind the scenes.
Right. Yeah. No, we're seeing behind the curtain, aren't we? Joel says, who says the Republicans aren't diverse? They welcome racist, bigots, white supremacists, white nationalists, neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, homophobes, misogynists, science deniers, climate change deniers, conspiracy theorists, and so many, many more. George,
it's a big tent.
It is. I just, I really want
to. Mike, when you say something like that, you always have to yell sarcasm alert, because there will be somebody who will write you a letter and say, how dare you?
I really wanted to watch the GOP convention. I got through the Stepford Wives, the Donny Osmond impersonator, watching White America on video. But when that nurse from West Virginia opened her mouth telling us Trump recognized the seriousness of COVID-19 early and did everything possible to save thousands of lives, it dawned on me I was watching an episode of The Twilight Zone.
As always, Trump's behavior and his regime inspires great comedy.
It does, but I have to say there was very much, and in the reviews in the press this morning, seemed to indicate what I think a lot of us were thinking, which is that this was, I mean, it was many things, but a rewriting of this history of the pandemic, number one. I mean, my goodness, of how that was twisted into that he was the only person who was aware of it and was screaming from the rafters that this was coming and we had to do something. And it was
no mention of the fact that there are more cases and more deaths in the United States than any place in the world, including countries that Trump called, I can't say it on radio.
Yeah, asshole countries.
Asshole countries.
But somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I was following the New York Times thread last night, and at one point they said that there had been no mention of the deaths as a result of coronavirus.
Didn't Trump mention it at the very end of his own speech? He referred to them, and said something somber about it. But
oh, this is in the morning during the roll call. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think they may have been talking about the nighttime. Yeah. That could be. Yeah.
Oh, he got it out of the way.
That's one other thing we didn't talk about. Trump's speech was again another attack on the legitimacy of the elections. So dangerous, and he keeps sounding that horn. He's not stopping.
From what we hear, he will be speaking all four nights. He did yesterday. Not night, but he spoke yesterday. And will speak for the other 3 days of the convention as well.
That's because he's convinced. He's convinced because of his egotism that he's the only one who can save him. Hey, Joe, can I read one letter that came in? Biden too centrist for progressives? ? What would you say to a 20-something progressive? And I want to address this letter to Rosemary, if I may. What would you say to a 20-something progressive who won't vote for Biden because it would be continuing the U.S. down a centrist line? This individual thinks that four more years of Trump will bring on a progressive revolution. I can't see how this wouldn't be a bloody mess. I've stopped trying to reason with her. Any thoughts? And that's from Margaret.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon voiced that back in 2016 when Trump first won, that she would rather have Trump than Hillary because he would force progressives to really take action. I think what we've seen in the last 4 years is such attacks on the institutions of democracy that that trumps everything else, to use a bad phrase here. I can't imagine what another 4 years would bring. When you realize everything from the post office to the FDC to the Weather Service,
Social Security,
all under attack and being
Supreme Court, yes,
the Supreme Court, they're all being dismantled. No, this is not a time to vote for or look for even the ideal candidate. This is a time to take the best measure. I know we said this in 2016, Hillary would be better then, but I mean it really sincerely now. You either have Trump and the destruction of democracy, or you have a centrist.
Yeah, well, you know, the 4 more years is going to be like 4 more years, you know, 4 of the same years. They don't have a new platform. They're sticking to the same plan. They just want to do it all. It's consistent. They want to use the same strategy to discourage people from voting and really push the base in the places where the electoral votes will help push them over the top. And what's the expression? It's fool me once, shame on you, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Yeah. There also, you know, I was struck by, because many in the RNC were saying that this was going to be a hopeful, uplifting convention. I don't know if they're building to that, but last night certainly was not that. And I don't know. And I don't know what else they have. I mean, I don't know how much uplifting content they have. JP?
Yeah, I when I watched the Biden convention, the Democratic convention, I felt that it was I felt it was an appeal to the middle the entire time, and I was surprised at last night that they're trying to fire up their base. I view as the convention as one of a very few opportunities where they're going to speak to people that aren't just political junkies like we are. You're going to speak to potentially undecided voters. That the convention and the 3 debates, that's your big opportunity. And if I was running the Republican convention, I would have been very focused on keeping them on message, on appealing to moderates and appealing to swing voters and not firing up the base. You know, Donald Trump spends 365 days a year focused on his base. They should take one night off or 4 nights off during the convention to try to appeal to swing voters that are going to decide the election.
But they don't believe that, right? They do not believe that. That's why, or Trump doesn't. We got a letter from Elaine from Galway, where, as you know, everybody plays the flute. Republicans versus Trumpers. Please don't conflate Republicans and Trumpers. It's unfair. There are citizens who are registered Republicans who are appalled at Trump's actions. We need, in capital letters, those people to come out and vote for Biden-Harris. Please don't alienate them.
Baloney, Elaine. Yeah. 96% approval rating among Republicans for Trump. No platform because the Republican Party is just going to go with whatever Trump wants. There are no Republicans. They are now Trumpers.
Now there are some of the more liberal crowd, the Bush type people and others who are going to be supportive of Biden and who are appalled at Trump. But you are so right, Rosemary. It's just a cluster. Put it that way, without any other words.
Dan writes to us and says Nikki Haley is a 2024 front runner. She was the only speaker last night who was not performing to an audience of one at the White House. She has a very clever triangulation strategy to get close enough to Trump to hold onto his base while trying to establish herself as an independent thinker and New Age Republican. Looking forward to Haley versus Harris in 2024.
That's an excellent analysis, I think. I think that's really, yes, that'd be very interesting.
With one exception, the part about looking forward to.
Well, you look down the road, too. I mean, it's ahead of us. But it'll be interesting that you'll have, in that scenario, you would have two women of Indian background, Indian American background.
I thought of that, yeah. You're right.
I don't disagree. I think I would rephrase it. I think Haley is just a blatant opportunist to pretend that she is separate from Trump when she's right in the same room with him. She wouldn't have had that speaking spot if she were not, to get out of his administration, so she cannot be tarred with it, but she doesn't condemn it. It's just the worst kind of political hypocrisy.
Yeah, but from Trump's point of view, he had to have her because she is obviously representative of a group of people, including suburban housewives.
Trump is spending his week looking for some kid in America who got over stuttering by reading his speeches aloud to try to compete with Biden. I'm sure that's true.
JP, you were going to say?
I was going to say that Nikki Haley, I think, believes correctly that the person that is going to most determine the next Republican presidential nominee after Trump is out is Donald Trump. His endorsement, even after he loses, I think his endorsement is going to be the most powerful thing for the potential 2024, 2028, Republican nominees.
Even if it's from a jail cell.
John... Rhonda says the inconsistent messaging was consistent with the lack of real ideology. Tell different people the different messages they hope to hear. I bet fans absorbed only those messages that they looked for. Also, we got this from Jonathan before we go to a break. Thank you for watching the convention so we don't have to. Our condolences, says Jonathan. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation, move on to other topics. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller will be right back.
Information on underwriting and how to become an underwriter at WAMCunderwriting.org.
Listening to Elvis Costello this morning. It's his birthday, 66 years old. So we're playing some Elvis Costello, and we have a complete playlist on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable, WAMC.org/roundtable. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and JP Miller making up the panel this morning, and we thank you all for that. Let's see. Mark says it was incredibly disappointing watching Cardinal Dolan's disgraceful tacit endorsement of Mr. Trump. Cardinal Dolan does not represent the views of a majority of American Catholics. Even his tone was disturbing, angry, demanding, defiant, forceful. As I listened, I thought of the church's history of enabling Hitler and the Nazis last century and remembered the words of Gandhi, who said, "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are unlike your Christ."
Ooh, that's kind of harsh there, don't you think?
Yeah, but you know, I have to say it was, I had trouble watching Cardinal Dolan as well last night, but certainly not the first
time. Did the Democrats invite any clergy?
Not that I'm aware of.
What were you saying, JP?
The Democrats definitely had an opening invocation. It was not from a Catholic priest, but they had a pastor provide an opening prayer, at least on the first night. I'm not sure about every night, but at least on the first night. And when I saw Cardinal Dolan last night, I was shocked as well. I thought he also seemed like he had rehearsed it. It was a bit of a performance. And I believe Joe and Mike and Alan and Rosemary, tell me if I'm wrong. I think, is he the top Catholic in the United States right now?
I think he is. Yes,
well,
I
mean, New York is the largest diocese, right, Mike? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's so by that.
Right, by clout. Yeah, you could argue it. But I think there's an apostolic delegate from the Vatican that sits in Washington, and there's also the Archbishop of Washington would technically maybe hold that, but that's been sullied by the Timothy McCarrick, downfall. But so I think you're right, though. I think de facto Dolan is like the American subpope, of the Catholics. And it's looked at that way by a lot of people.
But that was more than a prayer. I mean, that was, as the listener, the letter writer indicates, that was an endorsement. And it was very hard to kind of watch and make your way through. But
all I could think of was the Catholic churches, again, endorsing someone with a questionable sexual background, and that's risky for it.
I'm sorry, I don't get that. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, and you can clarify, but also risky, but consistent.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Well,
meaning that you have the head of the Catholic Church endorsing someone with a questionable sexual violent past.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Well, as the only Jew on this panel,
everybody. Go ahead, Alan.
I don't get all the nuance. Yeah, keep going, Alan. Put your foot really into it. I don't get all the nuances.
JP, what were you saying?
If you watch his prayer, he was very careful not to endorse Trump. I do think, in defense of Dolan, I think that if he were asked to give the invocation at the Democratic National Convention, I imagine that he would have certainly done that. And the one partisan, I don't know about partisan, but the thing that kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit was, and you would expect this from a Catholic priest, was the protecting the unborn. I thought that was something seemed.
He also talked about immigrants and refugees and people suffering from COVID. But you would, I mean, it wouldn't. It would be unlikely that a Catholic leader like Dolan would not mention the church's opposition to abortion. It just seems unlikely. And that's maybe why, and right there, he was so welcome on the podium there and would not have been as welcomed at the Democratic convention, because it would have just brought a lot of, dissent from within the party.
Okay. Where was he speaking from? Do we know?
He must have been in New York.
Yeah, it was in New York.
Do you guys think it was a mistake for him to appear last night and do it?
I think
it would have been a mistake
difference.
Go ahead, Mike.
It doesn't make a big difference. But I think it's a tough situation when a cleric is asked to speak at an inauguration or a swearing in or some kind of political event. Usually they walk a very fine line and they say things. I mean, some of them. I mean, obviously, there are very partisan clerics in all kinds of faiths. But when it's a situation like this, they're basically asking people's consciences to be open and do the right thing and ask God for guidance. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that him being there, the approach that Trump is taking to try to win over white suburban America, much of which is Catholic, and it has so many different threads going through it. It's complicated.
No, I agree with you. I think that's right. Look, we know that there are many, many people who do not believe, who are Catholic, and the polling is quite clear on this, who don't believe in a great deal that the church says. But there's a pretty substantial group of people who do believe that what the church says is, in fact, incredibly important in the way that they think about things. So,
it depends on what they're saying.
Yeah. I don't think I was surprised that even a cardinal, but someone of his stature, it was a little alarming, but not surprising.
I disagree. It's complicated. I mean, he stood up for a Trump administration that has been cruel and mean-spirited and inhumane. as simple as that.
No, he didn't stand up for them, though. He said we're both Republicans and Democrats, you know, begin their conventions, you know. I mean, I don't think he endorsed it directly, but I do agree, Rosemary, by him appearing on the podium at the start of the convention, some people will absolutely see it as an imprimatur by the Catholic Church on yes. the presidency of Donald Trump. And that should not yes. be taken from that, because he is so Trump's administration is so contrary in so many ways to the social justice message that the Catholic Church has embraced. And it's
right.
it's
so,
really,
I mean, if you're a cardinal, you have a certain level of
cloud.
Political knowledge.
Yeah.
And he allowed himself to be used in a way
yeah,
that
he
very easy
yeah, he may have,
to say he endorsed Trump.
Well, I don't know that he did actively, but certainly he is being manipulated by them, and they'll show that one a lot in their
oh, yeah.
videos that they have. Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry.
So Sister Simone Campbell, a Catholic nun of Nuns on the Bus, was delivered a prayer at the DNC. Thank you, Mary, who
That's
pointed
right.
that
That's
out
right. I remember
to
that
us.
Now, yeah. yeah.
And Kevin just wrote us a note with something that I was madly Googling while you all were talking, saying that Dolan has endorsed Trump before. He represents why so many critically thinking Catholics have left the church, not the faith, but the church. I thought Dolan had been had spoken out about Trump and also was involved in something else, and I'm trying to find that, but
yeah, that makes sense. You know, Trump has only invited people he knows like him.
Yes.
So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Dolan was included, Eric says, because Biden is a Catholic. He also had an audience that he can't find in his own church. I thank you all for watching the Republican convention for me. I hope you will get vaccinated. Okay. So,
By the way, I did hear from someone who knows that a Jesuit priest, Father James Martin, said the closing prayer.
Oh, that's
Thursday
right.
At the Democratic
right.
convention. Yeah. And he did pray for those in the.
I've got one here from the.
All our Catholic friends are checking in. Go ahead.
I've got one from the Catholic News Agency that says Dolan led prayers in 2012 at both the Republican and Democrat national conventions. And in 2017, he led a prayer at President Donald Trump's inauguration. So in 2012, he appeared at the Democratic National Convention.
We go to Marie, who says Catholics at DNC can. Okay, that we read that. That
separation
was another
of church and state. Let's eliminate all clergymen from these events.
Lisa's,
of course, I want to eliminate the events, too, so.
Lisa says, is
That's
it possible to update the terminology suburban housewives? It is antiquated to say the least and offensive at its worst. Well.
Why is it offensive? I'm a suburban housewife. I hope I don't fit the stereotype, but I am one.
I don't think you do, Rosemary.
Yeah.
Molly says, I didn't watch the GOP convention because my tolerance for manure is very low, but I'm interested in what was said this morning about Nikki Haley. It was suggested that she was looking to the future when she would keep Trump's base and move forward toward a centrist line. Is that even possible? The two sides seem irreconcilable to me.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, I agree, Alan. I mean, look back at the year 2000, or maybe after 2001, you know, when you had the terrorist attacks. I mean, America was united together. I mean, in 20 years, we've gone in opposite directions, and things happen so much faster these days. Things can move back towards something with the right kind of events, hopefully good events, not tragedies, that would bring us back together.
And by the way, the assumption that Nikki Haley is going to be the candidate, assuming that Donald Trump loses the next time around, you still got a guy named Mike Pence out there, and he's got a lot of loyalists in the party.
Hey, am I the only one who heard this yesterday? Did Pence say we need four more years to finish draining the swamp?
Yes. Well. Yeah, it's a big
job.
Yeah, big job. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue and talk about many other issues. We still have what is going on in Wisconsin, which is very troubling. And my God, since we're talking about religion, we can't let the Jerry Falwell Jr. story go. So we'll touch on that as well. We will be right back after this.
My spirit gets so downhearted. Sometimes.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, the 25th of August. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, and the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. We go to the story out of Kenosha, Wisconsin, that is far too familiar. What started as a peaceful demonstration on Monday in Kenosha over the police shooting of Jacob Blake swiftly devolved into chaos. Officers shot the 29-year-old black man multiple times in the back on Sunday as he entered a car with his children inside, a videotaped incident that has sparked national protests. Kenosha police on Monday used tear gas and fired small beanbags at a crowd that threw firecrackers, tore down street signs, smashed storefronts, and set fires around the city. By Tuesday morning, early Tuesday morning, the National Guard rolled through the streets as multiple buildings burned to the ground and looters ransacked stores. The fires not only destroyed local businesses, a cell phone store, a tattoo parlor, a furniture store, a Mexican grocery, but they also forced out residents who lived on the second floors of nearly century-old brick buildings. Protesters expressed rage at the police over Blake's shooting, demanding accountability and change. After the Sunday shooting, the latest viral incident of police violence in a year marked by protest over George Floyd's death in Minneapolis, the officers involved were placed on leave, and the Wisconsin Department of Justice stepped in to investigate. Blake survived surgery and is in serious condition, according to his family. So, that from the Washington Post. Who would like to start?
Well, I just wanted to say all you have to do is watch the video and you'll get why people were so angry. I'm not justifying the violence, but it's as if the protests after George Floyd's killing made no difference at all in the behavior of the Kenosha Police Department. I mean, that's the way it looks. And it's certainly very upsetting. But still, you get the opportunists and the hotheads who will exploit situations like that for their own gain, and you'll get looting and violence. But people are legitimately angry. I'm not endorsing the way some people act on it, but it's just horrifying to see this man, you know, at the car with his children in the back seat and being shot at such close range. Unarmed man. I just have to ask rhetorically, and this is a sarcasm alert here. Were there no mistreatments of black men by police before there were video cameras? I mean, video phones?
Yeah. Here's a question for the journalists on the panel, and I'm curious in just this as a procedural question, because it was something that the police chief, I believe it was the police chief, was speaking last night and saying that this piece of videotape was very small, and it was not it did not show the entire incident and does not show the broader context of the event. Which brought me to the question of if they have video and if it refuted how the police department is looking, wouldn't they release it? And what goes into that decision? Does anybody know?
They do not. That's part of the problem. Kenosha does not have police wearing cameras. They have dashboard cameras, but not on the officers themselves.
I see.
I am struck, now, just not as everything Mike said is true, but the behavior of the police department after the incident, which is what I think also contributed to the heated protest last night. They've not told us anything. They talk about, oh, there's a broad context that explains all this. They have not even explained the nature of the domestic abuse that brought the officers there in the first place. I don't think this guy was involved in it. He seemed to have been breaking up a fight between two women. And the fact that there are children there, what could justify a shooting for anything in a domestic abuse, unless you know the guy were standing over the women with a gun himself? It's just they are contributing to the sense of outrage, the sense that there is no reason for this. You can't just say, "Oh, we have a good reason to do this. Trust us." We don't trust the police right now.
And seven
good reason not to trust them.
And seven times. I mean, that's the other thing, right?
Yeah.
at close range. I mean, right there. They're holding him. You know,
I can't believe they didn't kill him.
I can't. Well, that's the other thing, Rosemary.
They're shooting at the children? What the heck?
I was shocked that that he was able to survive. I mean, he survived surgery and is still in serious condition. So the jury on that is still out, of course. But to survive what he survived is fairly amazing.
I did see one report, and I think it was on CNN, that said he was paralyzed, but I have no idea if that's true.
Yeah, well, it's It is very troubling. I'm wondering what you know, when you look at an incident like this. Mike said it so well, especially after George Floyd. If you think we would have learned something from that,
forget about we. How about they? How about the cops?
Yes,
they know what the outcome is going to be when they do something like this. When they shoot seven times, we all saw the horrific picture of the guy trying to get into his car. And the cops right behind him, and then they shoot him seven times. You would think that some image would go through their heads and say, hey, wait a second, remember Floyd, remember all the other stuff. This is a time not to do this kind of thing, but they did it anyway. I tell you, it's really extraordinary.
JP.
I think our Governor Cuomo has been one of the most eloquent people on this topic, saying that there really needs to be a wholesale reevaluation of the relationship between citizens and the police. And, you know, Governor Cuomo has mandated that in New York. And what I thought was troubling when you saw the pictures of the protests, you see the Kenosha cops are all in, you know, they look like Star Wars stormtroopers lined up. And it seems menacing. It seems like things are going to get worse with these protests rather than better. And the police wearing these stormtrooper outfits is something that struck me as saying this is not the way to go.
I apologize for the crassness of this question, given that a man is in a hospital bed as a result of the injuries he sustained in this attack by the police officers. But while the Republican National Convention is going on and so much about the former protests of Black Lives Matter is being discussed in veiled and unveiled terms by so many during this convention, will this help or hurt that messaging, do you think?
Well, I think that the violence and the burning of buildings and the looting is just giving ammunition to the Trump campaign to support that baloney that, you know, this is the way it will be all across America if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are, you know, elected, blah, blah, blah. I mean,
was that your Lincoln voice?
It does scare people. Yeah, right. but it is. I mean, it's scaring people is very effective. Scaring people who might be on the fence, you know, it's not the base we're talking about. It's a second category of people in the Republican Party. They're the hold the nose and vote for Trump people who are on the fence. And he needs those people, and scaring them is the most effective way to get them to say, well, I don't really like him. I like some of the things, and I don't want this violence. And then they hold their nose and they vote for Trump. I mean, I think that's where it's going to turn, if it turns.
I think you've got smack on, Mike. I think that's right. You know, this violence thing is what they're depending on to get them through.
And
it's such a crazy idea because, of course, as one listener already pointed out, it's happening during the Trump administration. And if he tries to clamp down, it's just going to get worse because there truly is injustice. And this is outrageous behavior by police. And people
Absolutely.
Are going to.
Yes,
they are right to protest.
That's right.
And I'm sure
I would also say that the vividness of these videos of George Floyd in this most recent example is something that I can't imagine any American sees that and says, well, the police were justified in that. You know, these are two stark examples out of many dozens, if not hundreds or thousands of examples of this happening. And I can't imagine any American saying that the police were justified in this.
I'm trying to imagine an administration which Matt Gaetz and Donnie Jr. are going to deal with injustice in the police department erupting into violence, how they're going to deal with it. It's just a horrendous view of the future.
They will not, Rosemary. They will articulate again and again how behind the police they are.
Yes, I know. And they won't go
that extra stop, but that extra, you know, place. But that's what they're going to say. You know, we stand behind our police. We're not for defunding the police. And that goes right to the base.
Will says, if I were a protester in Wisconsin today, I would go up to the members of the National Guard and ask them politely if they are there to protect us from the police. We have a couple of letters regarding the convention and some other topics that we discussed, and then we'll move on here. Mary said, Pope Francis has urged the world to urgently address the climate emergency. Everything Trump does is anti-climate. Catholic Americans might give the Pope's view more weight than a hypocritical endorsement by a cardinal. Paul says, what do you make of the fact that the RNC was not televised on Fox? It was rather conspicuous in its absence. Is that true? I don't know. Are they making a distinction between the Fox network and Fox News? That is my guess.
Well, I mean, Hannity was on last night, right, I think? And I mean, they go up to 10 o'clock. So it would have been that 1 hour, which the commercial networks, the other ones, you know, would show clips and kind of, you know, fade in and fade out of the feed and have their own commentators and show clips from earlier in the day and talk about it. I mean, that seems like the prime time hour, the 10 to 11.
I know earlier in the day yesterday, the president was tweeting and complaining that CNN had gone away from the roll call and that MSDNC, as he calls MSNBC.
good one. That's a good one, I think.
That they, we'll give him that, yeah. Hill, yeah. That they only ran a portion of it and that Fox News did run it, but they didn't shut up during it. I believe he said that they kept on talking over the roll call of all the people saying nice things about him, and he was upset about that. So that is our answer to Paul. Valerie says, I appreciate your laughter about the interviews of hostages, and I know you're all truly outraged. Can you channel this into a panel of how to change this presidency? There has to be a way to herd the proverbial Democratic cats.
Wait, I'm sorry. We're going to need to parse that because I have no idea. There was a real switch in the logic of the letter. Can we go over that again?
I appreciate your laughter about the interviews of hostages, I know you were all truly outraged. Right. Can you channel this into a panel of how to change this presidency? There has to be a way to herd the proverbial Democratic cats.
I was with it until the very end when it was the Democratic cats. What do you mean, heard the Democratic cats?
I think the writer is asking for our suggestions or our thoughts about how the Democrats can motivate their base.
Yeah. And we got this from John, who says the definition of the word racist is not bad person. America has over the last 40 years redefined it to mean that, but that doesn't make it true. You don't need to be a cackling, mustache twirling, hood wearing KKK member to be a racist, and you don't need to be a racist to help racism, to spread it, to feed it, to give it power. Racism in America is like Palmolive, you're soaking in it.
No, Nikki Haley told us America is
not a racist country. That's right. All right.
Yeah, it's very complicated because the word is such a hot button issue. It is so offensive to be accused of such a grotesque thing, and yet it's hard to deny that our society is embedded with it. It's so complicated.
Okay.
Libby Post has said over and over again, if you voted for Trump, you are a racist. And she's gotten so much bad reaction to that. But her point is a correct one. If you if you supported him, knowing how he feels, knowing that he is a racist and his policies are racist, and you dismiss that and said, oh, I'm voting him for other reasons, you still are supporting racism. So her point is really well taken.
We keep getting this one question again and again. How can so many people say they're going to vote for Trump when this country and its ideology and all the rest are what it is or what they are? Hey, all I know is we had a civil war. And in that civil war, allegedly, half the country was at the time was for slavery, Now, you know, you get done, you get the Emancipation Proclamation, you get, you know, the idea Lincoln's dead. But that group is still there. I'm sorry. They are still there. This is the inheritance that this country has had from day one after that Civil War and before.
I want to let's see. We have about 8 minutes before we have to go to a break. The story about Jerry Falwell is amazing, and I just don't quite get it. So here is a brief my this is just my timeline of things, but the you'll remember that Jerry Falwell Jr., who is the head of Liberty University in Virginia, took a leave of absence as the head of the college when he posted a picture on Instagram of him with what seemed to be an alcoholic beverage. He said it wasn't, but his fly was unzipped and the underwear was exposed, and he had his arm around a woman. So that raised...
Also open.
Thank you. Then that raised some eyebrows. It was just apparently a costume party, according to Jerry Falwell Jr. So now Jerry Falwell says that, and
normal
also
costumes.
Yes, and then the woman who was in the picture was apparently an assistant to Jerry Falwell's wife. Okay. So now the college said, hey, Jerry, maybe you should take a couple weeks off. So he goes off. Then
remembering, Joe, I'm so sorry, that they absolutely forbid any kind of sexual activity between the students at that college.
Well, right. And she wasn't a student.
That's not my point. My point is the hypocrisy.
Oh, you mean between the students themselves?
That's right.
Okay. So
it's an uber religious institution.
Yes, yes. The champions, they are there, according to their mission statement, to mold champions of Christ. Okay. So then on Sunday night, apparently there'd been a murmur that Reuters was about to do an article about Falwell. We'll get to that in a second. So Jerry Falwell quickly put out a statement and said that his wife had an affair with, yes, the pool boy. So apparently the pool boy, who now is 31 years old, but at the time was in Miami, and they Falwell and his wife took a liking to the pool boy, and they gave him the money so he could run a gay friendly hostel. Okay, it happens. So then at that point, but as of just Sunday night, it's just Falwell saying that his wife had an affair with the pool boy. Then on Monday, Reuters comes out and says that Jerry, they print the article from the pool boy's perspective, who said that he had many sexual, much sexual contact, many sexual relations with Mrs. Falwell, while Mr. Falwell was in the corner watching and, quote, enjoying it. This...
You called him Mr. He's reverend. You got to call
no,
him
he is
reverend.
Not. He is not a reverend. He is not a reverend.
Okay. He's a lawyer.
He is a lawyer. Okay, his father is a reverend. No,
he
is
a lawyer.
He is an esquire. So then the university says, oh, God, and they say, they put out a statement about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and says, we have, Mr. Falwell is no longer with Liberty University. We have severed our ties. Then, apparently, the university later said there was a holdup in finalizing negotiations and said that he had not been fired from the university. And as of now, he still is on. The last statement that I saw last night from the full board of trustees said that they wanted to take time to consult with Christ and with God to make the correct decision. I leave it to the panel.
He's extorting them. I think he's likely extorting them for money right now.
Well,
that's my guess.
Who extorting the college?
Well, yeah. He did build the college up. I mean, he came along when they had enormous debt, and he built them up and, you know, put them in the black and created a great billion-dollar endowment
sport
fund and everything
franchise
for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's really built that college, so he wants probably to be fairly compensated for the legacy of that financial, benefit. But, that's all.
But one thing cannot be denied, and that is this is a study of ultimate hypocrisy.
Absolutely.
Not only that, and number two, somebody's busy at work on some kind of porn film right now.
Yeah, as a investigative reporter, these are the stories that you just dream of. I was always amazed at how often corruption was connected with kinky sex, and here we go again. Incredible hypocrisy. The guy's lying, putting out a statement when he knows the story is coming. And he knows the truth, and he puts out a statement that his wife had the affair. He had to know what was coming. It's just so typical. And so in vain, because the whole story now is out. There's probably more, and I think you're right. There'll be a book or a movie coming out about it. And
apparently, and not to throw too much of a wrench into this, but apparently there are other pool boys as well.
Oh, my God. So, I mean...
go ahead, Rosemary.
I mean,
I was just going to say it's just immensely satisfying when you catch somebody who so richly deserves a comeuppance, and they get it like this, and he'll be out, and he's disgraced. He'll have lots of money.
And
he definitely is going to get money from the university on this, and his father gave it to him. But, let's also look at Trump. These are the evangelicals who have supported him. He got an endorsement from him. He's another reprehensible person.
Oh, right. I mean, back in 2016, Trump desperately needed a top evangelist, a top Christian right representative to endorse him. And Michael Cohen negotiated with Jerry Falwell Jr. to be like one of the first prominent evangelicals to come out in support of Trump.
We got to go to a break. But let's take a break. We'll be right back right after this.
Okay. Not satisfied.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Carolyn writes, wasn't the pool boy story killed by the National Enquirer in exchange for Falwell endorsing Trump? And this is what I think you were getting to, that there was, Mike, right, that the...
Mm-hmm. There were some pictures, I guess, out there that were potentially damaging to Falwell back in 2016. And Michael Cohen fixed that in exchange for his full-throated endorsement of Donald Trump.
Which,
and then
Ted Cruz was going to get the endorsement initially, it was my understanding.
So at what point?
That's right, he was a Cruz guy.
Yeah.
So at what point? Does Trump, for example, get held responsible by the same crowd for his sexual hijinks? Right? Am I correct about that? In other words, What should surprise us that this is going to happen and that there won't be great fallout because the same crew who says anything Trump does and anything he did do is excusable. And now his sycophant, his friend, Falwell, gets into the same situation. I'm trying to make sense of this and say, will this hurt him? Mm. If it had happened to Joe Biden, it sure would hurt him.
Two words, Jeffrey Epstein. Nope, he's not hurt.
Yeah.
Sorry, say it again.
Good point.
I missed it. What was the point?
Jeffrey Epstein. He should have been tarred by that as well and is not.
Yes.
Yeah, they called Reagan the Teflon president. What's this guy?
Yeah, that's beyond whatever. JP, what do you think?
My big regret is that this didn't happen in New York, so I don't have it on the Empire Report today. So I saw this story. I'm saying this is a perfect story for Empire Report, and I had to take a pass because it didn't happen in New York. So that's I'm bummed out about that.
Had you called me, I would have.
Now on Twitter is cocaine. There's the performances last night have led to rumors that Donnie Jr. and his girlfriend were on coke last night. That's why they were loud and screaming and gesturing. I don't really believe
they were certainly enthusiastic.
Yes,
Well, what was, and I don't want to add to conspiracy theory, and I have no idea, and hopefully he wasn't on any substance other than just his adoration for his father. However, what was up with the eyes? Because there were tears that seemed to be streaming out of his eyes, not just from like emotion, but just from the very beginning when he stepped out on stage.
Yeah, I told you, Bette Midler said, would his girlfriend yell at him or something?
I don't know if the two are related in the sense of the cocaine, but who knows?
Well, just back on the Falwell thing, to beat a dead horse. He did deliver back in 2016. The evangelicals all fell in line. Trump doesn't need him anymore. He's damaged goods. He'll be dropped like a hot potato. He already has been. And he won't be invited to give the closing invocation or whatever they call it at the end.
Right. Well, and there's also the pictures are great, though, because they have a picture. They have all kinds of pictures with Falwell and Trump together. And they were buddies, so they were around. And there are many, many pictures of the two of them. But the great picture is Falwell, Trump, and the pool boy. That's the great picture.
God.
That's the winner, as far as I'm concerned.
I repeat, though, Trump does not get tarred by his association. Let's look at Steve Bannon, who's an accused fraudster right now. He doesn't get tarred by the blackness that affects his friends.
No.
He pardons them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, while we're speaking about Don Jr. and while we're speaking about the president, let's talk about the New York Attorney General filing legal action. This is a story you can read about on the Empire Report. New York Attorney General files legal action against Trump Organization revealing state investigation into the company's financial dealings. So the New York Attorney General is investigating whether President Trump's company misled lenders and taxing authorities by improperly inflating the value of his assets, according to a court filing on Monday. The filing from Attorney General Letitia James said that the Trump Organization has declined to hand over some documents that have been subpoenaed and that the president's son, Eric, has refused to be interviewed. James's inquiry began 18 months ago, but James had not disclosed its focus or scope before Monday. Eric Trump, now the day-to-day leader of his father's company, agreed to an interview and then canceled 2 days before, according to the filing. He has declined to set another date, citing rights afforded to every individual under the Constitution to justify refusing the subpoena for an interview, according to the Attorney General.
It's the Fifth Amendment, you know.
Yes, don't you know?
Well, you know, I think he has a point. She has clearly shown that she has a bias against that business and has said she's going after Trump. The thing that disturbs me again, though, is that he's saying it's for political reasons. And we see again how Trump's business and his governance are combined. And they are not. They should not be by the Constitution or by his own promise. So, I mean, I certainly don't feel sorry for him, but I do think he might have a point about that.
JP?
Well, does Mike? Anybody think it's political? I'm sorry to step on JP there, but
really?
JP? The timing of this, the timing
sarcasm
of this, the
opening
day of the Republican convention.
No, the fact of the matter is, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I know JP will get in on this too, but look, the attorney generals in this state tend to run for governor eventually. And if Trump gets out, he goes in the cabinet, something like that. I mean, if Cuomo gets out, bad Freudian slip. If Cuomo gets out, and James runs, this will all be very helpful. And of course, it is getting close to the election. So now's when these kinds of things happen. What I want to know is, after the election, no matter what will happen? Will James drop this, or will she continue on?
Great question. JP?
I have what may be a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I think there's a little bit of investigation overkill on Trump's illegal activities. I would focus on failed COVID response, failed pandemic response, 31 million Americans out of work. Anything that takes away from that message of failed response on the pandemic, 31 million Americans out of work, is a distraction and is not going to help defeat Trump. The investigations, the Postal Service stuff, I think those things actually help Trump take away from what the real focus of what could really take him down are, which is COVID and the bad economy.
Now, you may be right. You may be right. I have no doubt that you are right, as you always are. Nevertheless, one could make the argument that she's the attorney general of the state of New York. She has legal powers. You know, the rest of this stuff is political, as in Joe Biden says it, or this one says it, or Cuomo says it. But this is her province, and this is why she's doing it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not. She should not be concerned at all with whether this detracts from the political message to defeat Trump. That would be using politics instead of doing her job. And I don't know if it's overkill. I think it's probably a good thing that you have Cyrus Vance and Letitia James trying to get those financial records from Trump.
We've been talking about this stuff about misstating his assets and for a long time now. It is interesting that it comes out into the light now, that the lawsuit happens now.
Well, I mean, this part does, but of course the tax return stuff has been going on for years.
It's all combined. It's all the same stuff.
Right.
Well, the real amazing thing is he's been running a criminal enterprise out of New York City for 50 years. And when Andrew Cuomo was attorney general, nothing, no investigations. He got the campaign contributions. When Cyrus Vance, before he was president, no investigations. He got the campaign contributions. But all of a sudden, once he's president, all of a sudden they say, let's focus on Trump's business dealings. I think it is a poor electoral strategy. It's definitely an electoral strategy for her to announce it the first night of the convention. Mm-hmm. And I think that they should focus on failed COVID response, 31 million Americans out of work. That's going to be his legacy. That's what will take down his presidency, not investigations on his business finances.
It is an either or. It's all of it, you know, and if it's coming at him in 10 different directions, so be it. And as the only Jew on the panel, I am. let me just say, based on what you just said, oy vey.
Oy vey. Rosemary, were you going to say something?
No, I said it.
Okay. Nobody may have heard it, but I know you said it. Okay. So,
I was saying JP's point was a good one that had not occurred to me before, that Cuomo may have let Mr. Political Donor Trump slide, and now that he's president, all the swords are out. I think that's an interesting theory.
It's an uncomfortable truth, but it's a good one.
Let's see. We got this from Rhonda, who says, my partner who worked in the clinic of a prison immediately said that Don Jr. was high. So, okay. Now now these letters come in.
I have no idea.
A professional opinion.
Performance was such as to inspire those kind of comments. Really, it best describes what he was like last night.
Let's see. We got this letter from Quinn who says, I do not condone kink shaming. Isn't it ironic how an evangelical Christian in such a high position who denounces anyone not in a strict heteromonogamous relationship is now being accused of being a bisexual participant? And it's like years of repressed sexual identity are bubbling to the surface. The hypocrisy is laughable. Well, this is what Alan said earlier, right? On the
I don't think we were kink shaming. We were hypocrisy shaming.
That's what we were doing.
I agree. I agree. Yes, your kink may vary.
Well said, Rosemary.
What people want to do is completely up to them. But when you make your career something about religious purity, moral purity, and, as you put it, strict heterosexual relationships, yeah, you deserve to be shamed when you get caught doing what a lot of other people are doing and you hate them for it.
Kathy writes to us and says, this is about police violence. Have we been brought up on Law & Order TV where we expect cops to rarely ever shoot anyone? On TV, they physically overpower suspects and cuff them. Is that what we want from our police?
Okay, I want that rather than what we're getting.
It would be great, but, you know, it doesn't happen as it does on TV. TV skewers the way we look at Law & Order and courts and crime and everything.
I've noticed that the way that Donald Trump runs his boardroom on TV was much different than the way he's running the White House.
Oh. Yeah, it does. It seems like there was a better script back then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was. Well,
the outcome was controlled.
And it was over in 43 minutes. That was the best part.
As somebody who used to watch, I'm sorry, I have to go back to the question of the cops shooting people on TV.
Law & Order. Yeah.
Yeah, it may be true that we don't do that anymore. But as an aficionado of Canon, I watch Canon every morning, very early in the morning. They shot everybody all the time. Everybody shot.
Oh, is Canon back on?
Yeah, Canon's on every morning.
Oh,
no, not
wow.
Monday mornings. Tuesday,
they
Wednesday.
They shot white people, too, and rarely in front of children.
Right.
Point taken.
Good point. Good point. I'm sorry. I'm still on the fact that Canon was around.
Around is right.
Well, now.
Rotund.
Now.
All right. I apologize.
William Conrad was a fine, fine actor.
He was.
Okay.
We fat shamed.
You had to jump. You had to jump on it, didn't you, Rosemary?
Thank you. All right, in 2 minutes, that's what time we have. We talked about the Republican National Convention and night one. So what do we expect from night two and more of the same, I would assume?
Well, you're going to get Pompeo talking about what a genius he is in terms of international relations and the Chinese and the rest. They won't be saying an awful lot about the Russians.
Kellyanne is on
tonight,
Wednesday. Wednesday for Stefanik.
Well, also,
and I think Kellyanne is Wednesday still now. Okay.
And I think Mrs. Trump will be on.
Yes, that's true. Yes, First Lady is on.
I wonder whose speech she'll use.
Oh, nice, Mike. Very nice.
Yeah, maybe she'll use the Michelle Obama speech from the other night. It is what it is. You know?
And with that, we'll end this morning.
Oh, no.
I know. My thanks to everyone. JP, it's time to go watch Conrad. We're going.
Right. Canon.
Oh, Canon. I'm sorry. Yeah. William Conrad as Canon. Was that a Quinn Martin production? No. Alan Chartok, thank you very much. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller, thank you all very much for being with us. I appreciate it. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.